You see them on the streets, walking from door to door in their Sunday best. They'll strike up a conversation with just about anyone they meet. The young men and women who do Mormon missionary work are sent to a different state, sometimes even a foreign country, to evangelize about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Along the way, they become extremely close to one another. They work from before dawn until after sunset. They travel mostly by foot and by bicycle, and they have only limited communication with family from home. Kyle Frost and Kevin Birch are with us now to share their experiences. Kyle Frost is from Mesa, Arizona. Kevin Birch is from Seattle. And they are nearing the end of their mission term after spending the last 23 months in Las Vegas. Kyle Frost and Kevin Birch, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dave. It's a great honor to be here.
So, Kyle Frost, take us through a typical day in your life doing missionary work.
Normally, missionaries wake up around 6:30 a.m., but we like to wake up a little bit earlier, around 5:30 or so, and go on a run. Just get ourselves woken up in the morning and get a little rejuvenated. So it's just exciting to get that going. And then we start about 8 o'clock in the morning. We have a study session for an hour. Just personally, we go through the scriptures. And then at 9 o'clock, after that 1 hour of studies, we come together as a companionship. And we discuss lessons that we're going to have. We talk about what we studied, different things that we can do throughout the day to help, you know, bring some people unto Christ. And about 10 a.m., we head out for the day. And anywhere from 10 to 12 or however long, we do what's called proselyting. And that's anything from knocking on people's doors to going to active members of the church and teaching them some lessons and going through the scriptures with them and maybe talking about people that they could share those lessons with, friends, family, whoever it may be. We have an hour for lunch. We get to stop in and we can go to fast food or wherever we'd feel like. And then the rest of the day, same thing. We're just out and about on the streets doing whatever we can to help, you know, find some people that are looking for something, looking for something to change their lives and be a little bit more happy. Dinner is usually, same thing, an hour long, and it's usually with members of the church. And then the rest of the night until 9 p.m., we're out proselyting again, looking for people and doing everything we can to just help somebody out. And then at 9, we come in, we sit down, and we open with a prayer, and we have a planning session, and we go through the next day. And we just talk about what we can do the next day to same thing, help some people.
Long day.
So it's good.
Very long day indeed. Kevin Birch, how did you guys come to rely on one another?
You start off and you don't know who your companion's going to be. Our mission president, he assigns us to a companion, and we'll be with them from anywhere from 6 weeks to we're coming up on 6 months together, 24/7. All day, every day, within sight and sound of each other. You really, I think you come to rely on each other the same way you do in any other experience in life. You really, it's just trust. He earned a lot of trust through me, and then so I've been able to rely on him ever since.
So if I open the door and you're there, you know, you ring the doorbell and I open the door and you're standing there to greet me, what's the first line? I mean, what do you say? Give me the elevator speech, if you will.
It's very difficult to make small talk at a door, you know, because obviously they understand I have an agenda, and so they're kind of waiting to hear what we're going to do. But truly, we try to talk with people. We try not to talk at people or to kind of force our message down people's throat. But really, what I like to tell people is, I have, in my life, experienced loneliness and sorrow. And what we have to share with people improves the quality of their lives, no matter where they are at. So it doesn't matter what kind of life somebody's living. We believe that what we share can improve the quality of somebody's life. We just try to figure out what they need so that we can help them with whatever situation they may be in life.
In the process of learning how to do that, and then when you started with the mission, how long did it take you to kind of learn to read the body language, read the territory, where somebody answers the door and maybe if they're standing in a certain way or the head's cocked in a certain way, you could kind of read it and say, okay, this is – we'll give it our best shot here, but this is not looking good. Or this is somebody who is receptive. How long does it take to pick that up?
I'll tell you what. For the first couple months, you really are quite clueless. You're going out doing something you're not comfortable with. It's very new. And so you very much rely upon your companion, who's much senior to you as far as the length of time they've been out. They're very much more experienced. And so you kind of rely upon them. But I feel like it only takes a couple of months, and then you start to really care about the people, as opposed to you have this agenda that you've got to take care of. You really, once you really care about people and grow to love them and are concerned for their well-being, you know, then you start to pick up, because I'm really, really trying to find out what I can do to help you. And so that's when you pick it up. Only a couple months.
Yeah, just a couple of months. Mm-hmm. Are there situations where you realize, okay, no point in pressing luck here. This is, you know, we shake the dust off our sandals and we move on to the next door.
You know, all the time. I mean, there's people that really, I guess not set in their ways, but they know what they believe, and mm-hmm. and we respect that. We want people to be able to believe that the way they want to. And so, I mean, you do recognize it when they don't want to talk to you, they very mm-hmm. well let you know, and so you know when to back off. But we just try to be as kind as we
so
can.
So, Kyle, for us, do you have – I mean, is there like a little practically little guidebook where they're the types? They're the ones who know what they believe, and that's that. They're the ones who want to argue with you. They're the ones that are just kind of off-putting. You could probably categorize them, I'd imagine.
Yeah, you very well could.
Do you ever find yourselves going away from an encounter like that thing, okay, didn't work? Didn't go where we wanted it to go.
All the time.
What? I mean, how do you keep spirits up when that happens? I mean, I remember just something as mundane as, you know, selling chocolate door to door for my junior high school.
Of course.
And you get, you know, if I'm batting 200, I'm doing incredibly well. But, mm-hmm. you know, 8 out of 10 times, no good, doesn't work. And I feel like this is awful. Yeah. How do you learn to deal with that kind of rejection?
You don't know anybody's situation. You can't judge people right away just based off of what you see. You don't know if they've just had a rough day. And so if you kill them with kindness, you give them every bit of happiness that you can, because what we share is centered around happiness. It's centered around hope.
What happens then? I'm this is a question I've always wondered in doing missionary work and such. What happens when you open your door to somebody who may be of a different faith and who's doing door-to-door work as well? Let's say someone who wants to hand out the Watchtower, Jehovah's Witness. I mean, do you look at them and think, okay, I'm not going to be mean. I'm not going to close the door in their face. How do you handle that?
Of course, you recognize they're doing the very same thing that I've been doing, you know? And so you have that camaraderie. You really do. Somebody who is rooted in what they believe and is so driven to do good, and they care so much about people that they're willing to knock doors for hours on end. And so, you know, having said that, we usually get into a very good conversation. Even on as a missionary, I've had some missionaries from other faiths come and knock the door, and it's great. We have a good conversation, ask how their success is going, and I'll tell you what, you know, you may have batted 200 with chocolate, but sometimes we bat quite a bit lower than that.
I was going to ask about that. You meet dozens of people a week, sometimes more. In a given day, how many people would you say are receptive to what you're trying to offer them?
I think it really depends on the day, and it depends on the attitude you take out the door. They can see sweat pouring down our face, and we're on a bike, and they're just interested to know, why are they so happy? So I would say, you know, anywhere from 3 to 5 people, you know, and that's all worth it. If you work 16 hours to have meaningful conversations with 3 to 5 people, and you can benefit them in their life, that's all worth it to us.
We are talking with 22-year-old Kevin Birch from Seattle, Washington. You just heard him there. And 20-year-old Kyle Frost from Mesa, Arizona. They both received the priesthood title of elder when they became Mormon missionaries, and they are nearing the end of their 2-year term in Las Vegas. The two of you are spending almost every waking moment together. I mean, for those 2 years, that's more than most friends, even married couples, spend with one another, day and night. And yet before this, you were strangers. How has the relationship evolved over time since you first met?
At this point, I look at Elder Birch as a brother. It's been really cool. We've served on opposite ends of Las Vegas for the first 18 months. And when we came together, like he said before, we have common goals and interests. And from there, you just really get to know the person. I mean, like you said, we're with each other a lot of the day. And so it progresses really quickly. And you really come to figure out who they are. And we've had a lot of the same interests in life. A lot of, you know, we love sports. We love, you know, being out and being active. And it's just, it's been really cool to see that two you know, young men, two people that just come from completely different backgrounds can come together and build such a strong friendship. I look at Elder Birch as one of my best friends.
Tell me something you've learned about Kyle Frost that most people, even some of his good friends, might not know.
Oh, that's
a dangerous question.
You're going to have a chance to respond in kind in a moment, Kyle.
I think what I've learned about him that not most people know is just truly, he is very funny. Very humorous guy around a lot of different people. I think thing I know about him that not a lot of people know is that he's able to discern when it's a time to be serious and when there's a time to be humorous. And he's always able to switch that on and off as the situation calls for.
All right, Kyle Frost, point, counterpoint. What do you know about Kevin that only 2 years of going from door to door could show you?
I think what I found about Elder Birch is something interesting is the way he's able to just gather knowledge so quickly and use that for his benefit. I mean, just being with him throughout the day, we'll be driving down the street, and this is just a random example, but he'll see the headlights of a car behind us, and he'll know what kind of car that is. And he can do that with scriptures. He can do that with, you know, whatever it may be. If he's in a situation talking to someone, he can figure out who people are very quickly. And it's really cool to see everything play out when we go to talk to somebody and he's able to just right away, just like that, connect with this person. And that opens up so many doors.
Now, you're from Arizona and Washington State, mm-hmm. respectively, but you're also here a little over 400 miles from the heart of the LDS Church, mm-hmm. in central Utah. But you're also working here in a city that is built to a certain degree on very un-LDS-like things,
sure.
Sin City and so, mm-hmm. on. We've got gambling, 24-hour bars. Does that set of factors make your work here easier or harder, or does it give you more opportunity?
That's a great question. We have a lot of people ask us that question, and they automatically think because of the environment – and the center of the city is the Las Vegas Strip, they feel like that a lot of doors would be closed to us as opposed to open. I've seen that people are much more receptive here because of the atmosphere that is here. They're looking for light in a place, in a world that's getting darker. Las Vegas is a great city, but the world is getting darker. So I feel like we have a tremendous amount of success here in this city as opposed to maybe some other missionaries around the world.
Have you encountered some quintessentially Las Vegas characters during your time here?
Yeah. Yes,
Kyle Frost?
I was in my second area over on, actually pretty close by here, Westcliff and it was Westcliff in Buffalo, I think it was. Just lived up right in a little cul-de-sac. And me and my companion were walking out and we saw a little garage sale. And as missionaries, we have ties, and that's about the only thing that we can switch up in our day-to-day. And so we went to this lady that was running the garage sale and asked her if she had any ties. just to try and spark a conversation. And it got going, and we found out she worked on the Strip. She was a dancer in one of the shows, and she was lost. She was having a very hard time in her life. She had no family members close by. And she wanted some help. She just needed something. She didn't know what it was. And so we started talking to her about the gospel. We opened up some scriptures to her. And it was amazing to see how quickly her life changed just because of, you know, stepping out and talking to her about some things that are a little more important than the Strip or whatever. And she ended up getting baptized about 6 months later, joining the church. And so, you know, you do encounter a lot of people that are very involved with what happens in Vegas.
Now, Kyle, you've told a story of a woman who phoned you and asked you to come over. And when you got there, she was high and wanted you to sing. It sounds like somewhere between something you would never dream of doing and other duties as assigned.
Yeah.
What happened in that story?
So as missionaries, we talked about how we were ordained to be an elder in the priesthood, and that allows us to give a blessing. We can go and lay our hands on somebody's head, as the Savior did in New Testament times, and we can go and give a blessing. And this lady had asked us to come over and give her a blessing, and she said she was just kind of scared and whatnot, and so we went over, and she was, in fact, on drugs, and we just had an interesting conversation with her, and it was kind of sad to see, but with what we have to offer, there's hope. you know, mm-hmm. she was lost. But we have so many opportunities. We have so many different venues for people that can help people get out of those situations. It's just mm-hmm. it's so hopeful to go into a situation like that and see someone so lost and be able to help them to progress from there to get out of that kind of a situation. Mm-hmm.
Now, you, Kevin Birch, attended a semester of college before joining a mission, and you've said you miss out on sports events, football games and such. Talk about those moments where you realized what you were missing out on while doing that work.
On the monthly or the weekly emails we get from our family, they talk about some of the different things that are going on. You know, my little brother is in his freshman year of high school now, and since I've been gone, he's grown about 4.5-5 inches. And he's wearing my clothes in my pictures. And so he's able to do that where he was just a little guy when I left. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, maybe a little bit. You kind of miss and wish you could have seen some of their sporting events or mm-hmm. plays or their opportunities they had to sing in choirs or some of their bright moments. You kind of miss some of those things.
Mm-hmm. Kyle Frost, what's your experience been like?
There's a quote. I hope I can get this right. But there's a quote, or it's the definition of a missionary. I've seen it around. It's someone that leaves their family for 2 years so that other families can be together for eternity. And I think that really, if we keep that in mind, it makes everything else seem a lot easier to deal with. I mean, you don't see your family for 2 years, but when you have that in perspective, that you're helping other families to have what you have, it becomes a lot easier and a lot more rewarding.
There have recently been some missionary deaths in the past few years, particularly mm-hmm. recently two died in Taiwan, and that number has been rising as of late. How are you trained to look past these risks and not be afraid when you are on a daily basis interacting with so many strangers? Have either of you worried about your safety while on mission work?
No, I don't think so. We have we live in a part of town that maybe would be labeled as a little bit more rough. Mm. We've had some people maybe test our windows from time to time. We've got bars on our windows, and they've tested our door a few times. And maybe you kind of get a little bit nervous every once in a while, but never have I felt that my immediate safety has been in danger on my mission. I've been very protected and extremely happy.
Kyle Frost, what about you? Have you ever felt in danger at times?
I mean, you definitely have situations where you think, wow, well, if that would have happened any different, I could have definitely been hurt. But, I mean, really, you hear about the missionaries that do have those things happen to them where they do pass away, and it's very sad. You mourn with their families, and you understand that that's a hard thing to go through. But the message that we have is centered around the fact that we do get to live with our families again and that we do get to, you know, have eternal relationships with our families. And so, you know, if you keep that in mind, the dangerous situations, the things that happen around aren't as scary. It's not something that really sticks out to you mm-hmm. as much.
This is a major commitment that you're making to your faith, your church, mm-hmm. your God. How has it changed you as a person? Kyle Frost, besides reinforcing your faith from a couple of years ago when you started off doing this, how have you changed inside as a person?
I think for me personally, I have a greater understanding of how a beautiful life can be, even though we do have trials. A lot of people think in life that when you go through trials, you have to be sad. And when you do go through a trial, there's sadness there. But with what I've come to learn from really immersing myself in the scriptures and in what Jesus Christ did when he was on the earth, that you don't have to be sad when you go through trials. You don't have to mourn all the time and be so sad with where the world is going. You can be happy in a world that is dark.
Kevin Birch, what about you?
Most of what I have learned and have applied has been through examples that we have seen in others. I think some of the things that have changed within me is that I feel that I'm a little bit slower to anger, I'm quicker to forgive, and I'm quicker to seek forgiveness from others.
There are several hundred Mormon missionaries who reside in mm-hmm. Las Vegas at any given time, and you have just met two of them. Elder Kyle Frost and Elder Kevin Birch are nearing the end of their two-year missionary terms before they return to their families and go on with their lives. Thank you both very much for being here.
Thanks. Great talking with us.
Thank you, Dave.